Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
You know what we need now? We need a group facilitator. And as it happens, I'm joined by Ronan Conway, who is a group facilitator. Good afternoon, Ronan.
Nice to meet you, Brendan.
Explain to people first what a group facilitator is.
Group facilitator is somebody who helps a group go from an A to a B. So every group, team, regardless of the context, is moving from an A to B. So I work with teams and I help them to build that sense of high performance. That's what I do with sports and workplace teams.
So this is about taking a bunch of individuals and enabling them to connect
exactly
into kind of one organism.
Exactly.
Yeah. What kind of groups do you work with?
So I work with sports and workplace teams.
Right.
I also work, I run self-development programs for groups of men in Mountjoy Prison as well.
Okay. So let's go through a few of them. So the sports is interesting, is probably where most people see it most obviously. So you worked as a performance coach with the Dublin senior football team in the run up to the 5 and 6 in a row. So what kind of things do you do in that situation?
Just to kind of like pull it up a small bit and just give you context about like high performing teams in general.
Yeah.
So like working in groups and working in teams isn't a new thing. It's been in existence since the start of time.
Yeah.
All the way back to the hunter gatherers taking down woolly mammoths. In more recent times, an example that I like to use with sports teams is that of the Polynesian navigators 3,000 years ago. They used to set off and embark on these voyages, and they used to hold four elements that were really strong to them. One was to have a strong vision as to where they were going to, so that was to find new islands.
Right.
They used to have emblazoned into the side of the boat, they used to have their values, which were ways of conducting themselves and behaving. They used to put a strong emphasis on having connection and belonging on the boat, so that when they get lost or they're making some big decisions, that they trust each other. And then finally, they would have a strong higher purpose, so that thing that's bigger than all of them, that's guiding them. And for them, that was to elevate the well-being of the tribe. Okay, so when you ask what I do at sports teams, I try to illuminate all of those areas for teams, so that when they're in the heat of battle and they're in those crunch moments on the field, that they know each other well enough, trust each other enough, and they're almost, I suppose, sometimes they can be, you know, almost telepathic. Athletes, they just know where people are.
Yeah. Give me an example, so, of how you would build that trust to the point of kind of telepathy or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be claiming
you're
that
give
I,
away the tricks of
no,
the trade.
No, like, I'm happy to share. Yeah. What I would run with any team is once I've worked with them. So basically, I work with them over the course of the season. So I'll come into their setup 4 or 5 times over the course of the season. On session 4 or 5, an example of what I would do is the lads would come into the room, and I'd have them sit down around in a circle. I'd ask them to close their eyes, and I would have them picture in their mind them being at their nearest harbour, say. So they're standing, 40 of them, at their nearest harbour.
Okay.
They see a big wooden boat. They embark the boat. They see a seat with their name on it. They sit down, and 40 of them start rowing out to sea. In the distance, they can see an island, which is their vision. So that might be a cup or a trophy. They'll see their team flag up the front of the boat. This is all in their imagination, by the way.
Yeah.
That represents their team, and it represents their people who they're playing for. And finally, I'll ask them to visualize a seat next to them that's vacant. And in that moment, I'll ask them to picture the people in their lives that mean something to them. And I'll ask them to pick one person symbolically. If you were to bring to the bring on the journey for the rest of the season, who would you bring?
Okay.
So with that, I'll ask them to open their eyes. And when they open their eyes, they'll be like that same team flag will be sitting on a table out the front with a marker. I'll invite them one by one to stand in front of the room and tell the group who they're bringing with them on the journey for the rest of the season. So as you can imagine, they might say their partners, they might say their kids, they might say their dads, their granddads, they might say people who passed away. So as you can imagine, it's quite emotive.
Yeah.
And one by one, they'll stand in front of the room and they'll sign that person's name on the flag. And when that first person is finished, he'll look around the room, he or she, and they'll call out who they want to go next. And in that moment, they'll tell the person what they bring to this tribe. So it becomes this conveyor belt of the flag being infused with this meaning and energy, but it also like starts tightening the bond between individuals.
And it's a little bit as well, is it, that if people want to kind of learn to trust each other in a team, they need to make themselves a bit vulnerable, do they? And you need to open up.
Yeah, you do. You know, like what I suppose the experts would call it is taking interpersonal risks with each other. So it's actually like it's stepping outside of the usual conversations in a safe manner, of course, but stepping outside the usual conversations and showing what's beneath the surface.
And look, I know you don't want to overstate this. You did a small bit of work with the Irish rugby team, but I think it strikes a lot of people that as a model of a team that's operating as a higher organism than the sum of the parts there, that Andy Farrell has done something kind of magic with those guys.
100%. Sure, like I'm sure a lot of us have been watching the TVs, our TVs, and like after the game when they're celebrating. And when they're doing interviews, you can feel something from them. You can feel something.
Is there an emotional openness there that you wouldn't have associated with rugby maybe a
100%. Yeah. And you're looking at it saying there's something going on there now. Like they are a tight knit bunch. But it was an honor to work with them. And they're like genuinely from 1 to 70 backroom team and team, just great people.
Yeah. So tell us about the workplace then. Are a lot of workplaces, is team a problem?
It's a full spectrum. Full spectrum. So what I'm interested in really is helping like teams to build a healthy culture where people are open and collaborating and working together as they should. Really interestingly, like, Google did a research in 2012 whereby they studied 300 of their teams worldwide, and they wanted to find out what the top predictive factor of team effectiveness is. And what the number one element was psychological safety. And for those of people who don't know what psychological safety is, it's the belief that we have when we come into our team environment that we can take those interpersonal risks. Say if you're in a meeting and if you feel psychologically safe, you're going to be able to put your hand up, make suggestions, ask questions, own mistakes and give people feedback without the fear of judgment and punishment. So like if you can lay that layer in a workplace or a team, one, it's going to be great for people's nervous systems and also a sense of well-being, but also it encourages sharing of information, which is so pivotal at the moment when people are working from disparate locations.
Yeah. Any quick technique on how you foster that safety in a group?
For workplaces at the moment, what I would be suggesting to managers out there, because they've got such a huge role in creating the environment, is with people working remotely, and I believe it was... 1 in 4 people were working remotely before the pandemic. 4 in 5 people are working have worked remotely since the pandemic. And there's a lovely quote by a violinist called Isaac Stern, and he said that music happens in between the notes.
Yeah.
But trust building happens in between the meetings.
Yeah.
But because many of us are working remotely now, it's being more deliberate about creating those relationship building opportunities. So to your question, it's having a Monday huddle whereby people aren't allowed to talk about work, for example, but they talk about how they are coming into the week and how is the weekend and what's going on for them, you know.
Okay. Which is going to seem weird to people initially, but I can see
how it would. And like sometimes when people think of these exercises, they think of Ricky Gervais from The Office and like really awkward moments. Yeah. But I suppose when it's set up well and it's held well, it can land. Secondly, what I'd say to people is it can be a buddy system whereby if you're working from your house and 3 of your other teammates are working from their homes, that you turn on your cameras and you don't even have to speak, but you can just see each other working together. It can be quite powerful.
Okay. And again, people are going to be resistant to that, but I can see what you mean. Okay. You've worked with young people and in schools as well. And it feels like there's a big... Is there a cultural issue in a lot of schools now around bullying and how it's being dealt with and how it's happening and everything and the group dynamics there?
Yeah. So firstly, I worked with teenagers for 8 years and I haven't worked with teenagers for 3 years. So I actually finished working with a great, great organisation called the SOAR Foundation 3 years ago. But from my experience, there's a spectrum and there is bullying in most schools, you know, and there's dysfunction in most schools. But like, you know, young people are in the waiting room in some ways in terms of they're not kids and they're not adults. It's such a unsure, confusing and sometimes challenging time. But what the SOAR Foundation does is they provide a space for teenagers to, we travel out to, SOAR is still in existence, by the way, they're doing some great work. But the facilitators travel out to schools all around the country and they deliver self-esteem and resilience workshops for teenagers.
Okay, which sounds like, you know, woo-woo.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example of how it looks.
Yeah.
So to your point about bullying, we got a call around 5 or 6 years ago from a principal saying that there was bullying and isolation and young people acting out and people spray painting the back shed. And they were like, will you come down and have a chat with them? So myself and my co-facilitator Sinead, we jumped in the car and we drove down the country. And just to paint a picture, you walk into the school and there's a school hall usually, and you set up your equipment, your projector and speaker. The kids walk in, there was 50 of them, and when they sat down, you could see the disconnection, you could see the lack of trust, you could see people hanging out the windows hollering, yeah. You could see people throwing school bags, you could see a young fellow up the front with like hair draped over his face, obviously just didn't want to be seen. So all sorts of characters.
Yeah.
So we said we'd run an exercise called Circle of Difference. Now when the aim of that really is to help young people see like how they're different, but also how they're very similar. And so anyway, just imagine like 40 young people standing around in a circle in their school hall.
Who don't want to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're curious, you know, they're curious when they see new people walking into their school.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I introduced myself and I said I was from Cork, and they greeted me with a guy down the back said, "You Cork rat." And he had serious venom in his voice. And now I hope to God you never get called that name, Brendan, in your lifetime. But so anyway, we continued on after that, and we did that exercise called Circle of Difference. So someone would step in first, and I remember the young fella said, "I put ketchup in my porridge." The next person stood in and said, a young fella again, he said, "I have my nipple pierced." And you can imagine the reaction that got. Next we had someone who said like his parents had just split up. The room goes a bit more silent. You can see people looking towards this person and that connection is building. There was a girl that stood in saying that she has learning disabilities, and she shared with people what it's like to come to school with a learning disability and how that impacts.
Okay.
And so people are learning as they go. There was a boy in a wheelchair who spoke about what it's like to come to school, being the only person in a wheelchair, and what it's like when he leaves. I could go on and on. I'll give you one more example. The guy with the long hair draped over his face stepped in at the very end when we were about to wrap it up, and he said, "How I'm different is when I get up in the morning, I feed and clothe my dad because he's been sick for years." So room goes silent again. The kids start looking at him, and without me asking or Sinead asking anything, they just start apologising to him for giving him a hard time.
That's very powerful, isn't it?
That's actually an incredibly
moving story.
Yeah, yeah.
And that happened from zero. A bunch of them came in cold, suspicious of the situation. But once that ball gets rolling,
And like when you say the ball get rolling, it's helping people feel safe. It's that psychological safety thing that they're not going to be judged for what they say. If anything, those young people in the room that day, they were judged hugely positively. to wrap up on that, like Sinead at the end of the workshop, she said, what did you learn, guys? And they said, we learned what real resilience looks like. We learned how to express ourselves, but also really listen to people. And we also realized that other people have their own universes inside of them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then possibly more challenging than all of that, I know you're very passionate about the work you do in prisons, and people might have seen you were on with Philly McMahon on Gaelic in The Joy. So what kind of work? I mean, these are presumably some of the most closed, toughest kind of nuts you're going to need to crack, are they?
Yeah, like the environment that they're in is... the essence of it is there's a lack of trust there, 100%. But like these guys that have, what you learn from doing this work is that the people who have the thickest layers and protective armor wrapped around their personality are the ones who've been most hurt in life. So like there's 4,500 people in prison in Ireland today. The last census report reported that 45% of people who leave prison will re-offended within a year in 2019. So like prison is a place for punishment, right? But like it's also a place where we need to rehabilitate these men and women, because, and you know, that's where the program I'm running helps out in that area. But like, I suppose we need to ask ourselves, it's like, what kind of people do we want coming out of prison? Do we want people who are angrier than they went in and more dysfunctional than when they went in? Or do we want people who are healthy and have a good relationship with themselves and other people?
Okay. And can you kind of briefly, because time is against us, can you tell me one way you can help people in prisons?
Yeah. So like a lot of these men have experienced hugely traumatic lives and have a lot of emotional scars. And they have some very limiting beliefs about themselves and other people and the world. So one way that you can do that is to help them reflect and discuss in a group what their early life was like, who was around, who wasn't around, what mentors led them the right way and the wrong way. Also help them understand their emotions, their thoughts. A lot of these lads have never been taught this, you know.
Yeah.
But also help them understand why they react in certain ways to different stimulus, what their trigger points are. So, yeah, that's... Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Listen... is there any lessons in here for people in their own family, their own social groups and that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, like I've been lucky enough to have a peek behind the curtain in a lot of different areas. Yeah. And like there's a few points that I have learned for myself. The first one is, as those teenagers found out that day, everyone is a universe. And what I mean by that is everyone has their own internal thoughts, feelings and emotions going on. It's kind of obvious, but like sometimes we can forget about that. And a lot of that comes from childhood. And just to remember, you don't need to be best friends with everyone or you don't need to like everyone. But the thing I've learned is that like to just take a moment to understand that. And to parents, what I'd say is, I'm not a parent, but I suppose what I've learned from teenagers is, and briefly, I have met people, teenagers when I'm working in schools, and then subsequently when they're in their early 20s, I've met a teenager in prison and I've met them while they're playing for teams and in politics and whatnot. Yeah. So the paths can deviate. So three things I would say to parents is, from my experience, is helping your young person to find a sense of purpose. So what is it that lights them up?
Okay.
Something that they can aim towards, whatever that is. Secondly, it's belonging. So it's helping your young person to find their tribe, not the tribe they feel they have to hang out with, but their actual tribe.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's an old African proverb and it says, if the child isn't embraced by the village, they'll burn it down to feel its warmth. Okay, it's quite stark, but it's like we need to wrap around as a community also, I feel. And last thing I'll say is, I spoke to a dad there a couple of months ago and he said, geez, my kid's very anxious and he's quite low. Is there anything he can do? And I said, what were you like when you were a teenager? And he said, I was the same. And I said, what are you like now? And he said, I'm fine. So I said, would you ever have that chat with him and maybe tell him what you were like and see what happened from there? So that's what I'd say.
Okay, Ronan Conway, group facilitator. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
You have a lovely energy as well, I have to say. I can see how you come in and manage to get people to open themselves up in ways they didn't mean to. That was fantastic. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.